Hello and welcome to Future You, the podcast brought to you by graduate careers experts Prospects. I'm your host, Emily Slade, and in this episode, we're joined by Save the Student, who offers some helpful tips and tricks on how to look after your money. Whether you're still a student or just about to graduate, this episode has something for everyone, focusing on the financial future you.
I'm Tom Allingham, and I'm from the student money website, savethestudent.org. We are a student money advice website, so we help students learn how to manage their money, how to make their money go further, how to figure out things with student finance and all that kind of stuff, but also lots of general student advice as well, and advice on kind of getting through university and then approaching graduate life as well. And I think that's really what I'm here to talk about today, is that kind of time as you're coming towards the end of university and looking into life as a graduate.
Perfect. Do you have some top tips when it comes to budgeting?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the important thing about a lot of the information on our website actually is that yes, this information is really, really useful for students, but a lot of it really is actually great advice for life. You know, it's a lot of the advice on the website is stuff that I do in my kind of day-to-day life to try and save money. So I think one of the big things, for instance, is with your bills or your bank accounts, always compare and always switch providers if you think you can get a better deal elsewhere. So things like I say, energy bills, maybe not so much at the moment, but in kind of quote unquote normal times, mobile phone bills and bank accounts, it's very, very rare that being loyal to one company or one provider will actually be beneficial to you. It's usually much, much better to switch to a different provider because new customers get the better deals. You might get, you know, a certain kind of freebie by signing up to a different company. But as I say, it's very rare that sticking with one company, you know, for longer than a couple of years is going to pay off. So always look to be kind of comparing and switching providers where possible.
Is that something that you can do at any moment, any time, just have a quick Google as to what's out there and just sort of do it one weekend?
Yeah, for the most part, yes. There will obviously be some limitations to it. So I would say, for instance, with, say, mobile phone contracts, if you're on, let's say, a 12-month or a more likely a 24-month contract, you will probably have to see out the term of that contract. But if you are approaching the end of it or if you are out of contract, that's the time to be looking to compare and switch. And with regards to energy bills, as I say, we're just kind of coming out of the energy crisis now. So we're starting to see more providers offering different rates. With that kind of thing, you might find that you're with a provider who doesn't actually charge any exit fee whatsoever. So there'll be no fixed contracts. You can basically look to switch at whatever time. So in theory, you could switch, you know, every single month to a different energy provider if you were able to find a different, better deal every single month. Obviously, the practicalities of that are a bit, you know, it might not always be possible. But in theory, yes, it's something you could do any time. One thing we always like to encourage people to do is try to have at least one no spend day each week, which means that you have a day in the week where you just spend no money whatsoever, which might need some forward planning. So it might mean that you need to do a weekly shop or something, you know, just to make sure you have food in on the day. Obviously, if you're commuting to work or to university or whatever, probably won't be one of those days because you might have to pay for the bus or the train. By doing this, you're kind of reversing that habit that you might get into nowadays with mobile phones, with contactless, all these kinds of things, where it's very, very easy to get into the habit of spending money almost as a habit. By having a no spend day at least once a week, you're kind of reversing that and getting into the mindset of actually, you know, I don't need to spend money all the time.
I imagine there's lots of information on your website for students, undergraduates, that sort of thing. But what we'd really like to focus on today is that move from undergraduate to postgraduate. So can you tell us a bit about tips and tricks in that stage of your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So the big thing is that obviously when you're a student, the chances are you will have a student bank account. So that's a special bank account that the bank has given you with certain conditions and certain terms that are only available to you because you are a student. And the big thing is that you have that 0% overdraft of a few thousand pounds that lasts for the duration of your time at university. Now, when you get to the point of graduation, the chances are you will probably be in that overdraft to at least some extent. You know, it might be a couple of hundred, it might be a few thousand, and you might be concerned about what's going to happen with that debt when you graduate. The good news is that all student bank accounts become graduate bank accounts when you leave university. So you'll get to keep your 0% overdraft for at least another year. It is worth noting, though, that whilst you're a student, the allowance of your 0% overdraft usually would increase each year. So it might get a maximum amount of £1,000 in your first year, £2,000 in your second year, £3,000 in your third year. When you graduate, the opposite happens. So you go from whatever the maximum you're on now, and it will slightly decrease year on year. In some cases as well, you might only get a graduate bank account for 1 year. So as I say, it's worth noting that not all graduate bank accounts, as with student bank accounts, they're not all the same. Each bank will have its own different terms and conditions. And it's also worth noting that not all graduate bank accounts allow you to switch to them after you've left university. So with that in mind, I would say that if you are approaching the end of your time at uni, check in advance, see what the graduate bank account terms are with your bank. See if the 0% overdraft allowance that they're going to give you is enough. Is it going to last for long enough for you to kind of get out of that overdraft? There's no guarantee that you'll get a job straight away when you leave university, so bear that in mind. And also, as I say, check to see if there are other better graduate bank accounts out there and if they'll let you switch to them after you've left university. And if they don't, if they only let you join them as a student, so i.e. before you've graduated, make sure you do that in the next couple of months and don't leave it too late, because it might be then that you're not able to switch to that bank account.
Amazing, thank you. One of the first costs I think that students are going to be hit with when they get to the end of their studies is graduation. Would you like to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you might think, you know, having attended university for 3+ years and spent over £9,000 a year in fees, that you kind of get to go to your graduation and it would be free. That's not always the case, unfortunately. So some universities do give you free tickets to your own graduation. So it's worth noting that as a student, you will get to go for free. But if you want to have guests attending your graduation, so you might want to have your parents there or your partner or your friends or whatever, you can sometimes get free tickets depending on your university, but it will usually be a maximum of 2 per student. But also, not all universities do give out free tickets to graduation. And when they're not free, they can also cost as much as £20 or £25. So if you want to bring 2 guests, you could be looking straight away at a £50 cost. On top of that, though, robes, so we're talking about the gown that you wear over your clothes and the hat as well, these are almost always mandatory for you to wear as part of the ceremony. So you will have to rent those. And quite often, universities will say that you have to get them from a certain provider, which means that you won't be able to then get it from a kind of cheaper, you know, for want of a better term, like knockoff provider. If you're able to find them cheaper elsewhere, unfortunately, lots of universities say that you have to get them from whatever provider they've got an agreement with. And in these cases, it will cost you £40 to £50 for rental. So if you're looking at the cost of tickets together with the cost of robes, then you're talking at the thick end of £100 here just to go to your own graduation. And that's not even including the cost of professional photographs, which these aren't mandatory. You can choose not to have them and just take your own photographs. But then you'll be looking at another, I would say, minimum £20. So it is worth noting that these are the costs associated with going to your graduation. You don't have to go to your graduation, but I say that you've gone to university for 3 years. It's a nice thing to be able to do. So again, think about in advance if you want to be covering these costs or if you want to be paying for extra guest tickets to your graduation. Have these discussions with whoever you want to come to your ceremony and think about how you might be able to cover those costs in advance.
Most people, when they attend university, will have gotten some sort of loan to try and cover the costs, and then they will obviously have to start repaying that. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So the way that you repay your student loan does vary depending on which part of the UK you're from, which then determines what type of repayment plan you're on. But the general rules across each repayment plan are basically the same. So there's a threshold at which you start repaying your loan. And that, as I say, that varies across the UK. So it could go from as low as, at this point anyway, as low as about £22,000 a year to as high as about £27,500. Once you do start earning over that threshold, you pay 9% of whatever you earn above it. If you start earning below that threshold, then your student loan repayments stop completely until you start earning above it again. It's also worth noting that you don't start repaying your student loan immediately after graduation. You start repaying it in the April after you graduate. So let's say you graduate in July 2024, you won't start being eligible to start repaying. No matter how much you earn, you won't start being eligible to start repaying your loan until April 2025. So that's another thing to consider as well. There's also the element of cancellation of the debt. So again, this varies depending on what your student loan plan is. It could be up to 40 years, but that's only on the new plan in England for students who started in September 2023 or later. For everyone else, it would be 30 years or less. And basically what that means is if there's any outstanding balance on your student loan after that period, the government will cancel it. So you don't need to repay it. And an important consideration to make with all of the student loan plans is that as I say, it's only a percentage of your income over a certain amount. So with that in mind, it is kind of like a tax, and it is broadly speaking quite manageable. But also, it doesn't affect your credit score, and you won't have, for example, bailiffs coming after you if you're not paying it. It operates in a very different way to traditional debt. And as I say, because you're not repaying until you're under a certain threshold, it comes out of your salary automatically. It's not something that you'll need to worry about too much once you graduate and start working.
I was going to say, you've already answered, it's not really anything to be sort of worried about or scared about or really sort of stay on top of in the way that you would a normal loan that you've taken out. Would you advise anyone thinking about actively trying to pay off their loan? Is it almost better to not invest in that because of the amount that's going to build upon it over the years?
Yeah, it is a tricky one to give an absolutely definitive answer to, because it will vary based on circumstance. So if you either graduate into a job with a very high salary or expect to be earning a very high salary quite soon, then there might be reason to pay off your loan early, because there's a good chance you repay it in full at some point. For most people, and again, it does vary depending on plan, for most people, you probably won't end up repaying your loan in full. And as such, there's not really any reason to make voluntary repayments on it, because, as I say, after that period of time, the government will cancel the remaining debt anyway. So if you have a certain amount of money that you're able, and you're thinking, oh, I have this spare cash, I could put it into repaying my student loan, our advice would very strongly be put that somewhere else, you know, be put that towards, for instance, if you've accumulated any private debt or credit card debt, pay off that. Or if you're looking to buy a house at some point, you know, put it into your savings, put it into towards a deposit. That's a much better use of that cash.
Would a recent graduate need to be considering anything like an emergency fund if they were to find themselves kicked out of their accommodation or made redundant from a recent job? Is that something that they need to keep in the back of their head in terms of their finances?
I think, again, it's one of those ones where it's difficult to give a definitive answer for everyone. What I can say is that if you do find yourself in a situation where you do have some expendable income, so you're not having to spend all of your income on your kind of basic living costs like rent and food and travel, if you do find you're able to put some money into savings, then absolutely having an emergency fund is a great idea, because, you know, you never know what's going to happen. It could be that your car breaks down and you need to, you know, have substantial repairs on it. It could be, as you say, being kicked out of your accommodation. All of these things are something that you just often can't see coming. And will want that emergency cash for. But it is also worth bearing in mind that lots of graduates will not be starting on huge salaries and might not necessarily be able to put much, if any, cash into an emergency savings pot. So with that in mind, I would say put money away if you can, but, you know, be aware that it's not possible for everyone, and don't feel like you're kind of failing or whatever if you're not able to do that.
Perfect. Thank you. So that's sort of around looking towards the future. How sort of soon as a graduate should you be worrying about saving for a house? Is there tips and tricks that you can sort of get on the property ladder as you're coming out of your graduation?
Yes. So again, you know, buying a house is something that will vary so drastically from person to person. I think the average age at which a person buys a house in the UK, I think it's currently about 33, 34, 35, which is kind of depressingly old, and, you know, might seem quite a way off for a new graduate. You know, we're talking best part of 15 years away. But you can make that happen sooner by taking a few steps. And I think the single biggest thing that anyone can do, you know, which is very, very easy as well, is to open a lifetime ISA, which is a kind of government-backed savings account where each year you can put in up to £4,000, and the government, you know, depending on how much you put in, the government will pay a 25% bonus into your account on up to £4,000. So let's say you put in the maximum of £4,000, you get 25% of that as a bonus from the government, £1,000. So that's, then your total savings for that year goes to £5,000. And you can put in, you can do this every single year and get that £1,000 bonus, or up to £1,000 bonus every single year. And I think it goes for about 30-ish years. So in theory, you could earn up to £30,000 of bonus money from the government. And that's not even including the interest that you can earn on that account as well. There are some stipulations with the account though. So the money in it can only be used to buy a house or for your retirement Or as well, actually, I think if you have been given less than 12 months to live, I think you can take the money out. If you take the money out for any other reason, you'll be charged a penalty, which currently means you'd lose your entire government bonus plus a percentage on top. Now, there is talk that this might change at some point soon, at which point, in theory, it would change so that you'd only lose the government bonus. So you wouldn't actually be any worse off than the money you put in the first place if you took the money out for any other reason. And another thing to consider is that there is a cap on the maximum value of the property that you can use the lifetime ISA for. Now, again, there is talk that this cap might increase very soon because it hasn't increased for a long time. So I think it's 450,000 at the moment is the maximum value of a property you can use it on. Since the lifetime ISA was introduced, obviously house prices have increased. So 450,000 gets you less than it used to. So as I say, that limit might increase at some point very, very soon. But it is worth noting, in case you live in an area where you don't think that the maximum amount that a ISA will allow you to buy will actually be enough to get you anywhere where you want to live.
Let's say you want to continue your studies heading into a postgraduate degree, for example. What options do people have there?
So yeah, with postgraduate degree funding, in principle, is quite similar to undergraduate degrees in that you can get funding from the government, but it does vary across the different parts of the UK. So in England, Scotland and Wales, you can get a loan from the government to pay for your tuition fees and your living costs. But in Northern Ireland, the money that they give you is only for tuition fees. But even in England, Scotland and Wales, where that money is designed to go towards tuition fees and living costs, I would say in the majority of cases, the amount of money that they give you, particularly in England and Scotland, will not be enough to cover both your tuition fees and your living costs. So unlike at undergraduate level, where they give you a separate tuition fee loan and a separate maintenance loan, so the tuition fee loan goes straight to university, at postgraduate level, they do just give you a lump sum of money and it's up to you to divide that between tuition fees and living costs. And as I say, in the majority of cases, you might have enough to cover your tuition fees, but it unfortunately in a lot of cases won't be enough to then also cover your living costs as well. So that's when you're going to be looking to alternative sources of funding. So you might be looking at research grants from your university, sponsorship from your employer, sponsorship from maybe a charitable foundation or a trust, or potentially as well, you know, getting a part-time job to see you through that time at university. But as I say, unfortunately, the postgraduate loan probably won't be enough to cover your tuition fees and living costs in full.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Emily. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks again to Tom for his time today. If you want to find out more about Save the Student, you can click the links in the description below. Make sure to give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to get in touch, you can email us at podcast@prospects.ac.uk or find us on Instagram and TikTok. All the links are in the description. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.